Beach, KX93.5.
Good morning. Welcome to the Friendship Show here on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. My name is Mark Miller. The next 60 minutes of community-supported radio is brought to you by Friendship Shelter, reaching out to rebuild lives for more than 26 years right here in Laguna Beach, California. We're getting towards the end of the year here, and lots of organizations who do the kind of work that we do here at KX93.5, we're starting to do some year-end fundraising. I don't know how many people listening are members of KX93.5, but right now we are doing a big membership drive to try and get as many new members as possible, as well as if you have a membership and your membership has expired, you're going to want to do something to get that renewed so that you get all of those handy little perks that you get when you become a member here at KX93.5. And remember that all of the money that is raised at the radio station goes to support community radio right here in Laguna Beach. Now, what you're not going to want to miss, though, is Monday, December 15th and Tuesday, December 16th, KX radio stations are being taken over. There's an actual coup that's happening those 2 days, because we're going to have special jocks, special DJs are going to come in. They're going to run the station, man the board, and their goal is going to be to raise money for the station and encourage membership. And we've got some great celebrity guest hosts coming in next week. Mayor Bob Whalen is going to be here. Councilmember Tony Eisman is going to be here. Mark Christie will be here. Bobby Cox will be here. And there's a whole other lineup of special celebrity guests who are going to be here actually on the air. That's Monday, December 15th and December 16th. So check it out. Make sure that you you listen to the radio station on those 2 days for sure, and do everything that you can to support community-supported radio. Support community-supported radio. Right here in Laguna Beach, California. We have a great show this morning here on Friendship Show. Deborah Miller is the founder of an organization called Cure Duchenne. We're going to take a music break, and when we get back, we're going to talk with Deborah about the work that she does in that very important organization. We'll be back in a minute. You're listening to The Friendship Show on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM.
Be a bright,
Welcome back. You're listening to Friendship Show on KX93.5. We're sponsored by Friendship Shelter, reaching out to rebuild lives for more than 26 years right here in Laguna Beach. Our guest this morning is Deborah Miller. Deborah is the co-founder of an organization called Cure Duchenne, which is a nonprofit organization, a national-based organization, dedicated to finding a cure for the disease called Duchenne. Deborah, welcome to Friendship Show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Oh, we've actually been waiting for you to be here for quite some time. So I'm glad we were finally able to do that and that you were able to come in so early on a Saturday morning. Cure Duchenne is the organization. When did you were the co-founder of this organization?
So my husband Paul and I founded this organization in 2003.
So it's 11 years old now. Yes. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What exactly is Duchenne?
Duchenne is a progressive muscle disease that affects primarily boys. They are diagnosed usually between 3 and 5 years old when parents or teachers notice that they can't keep up with their peers, they have trouble getting up off the floor, and many times it goes undiagnosed, as did our son. And it's basically a simple blood test that shows there is a missing protein called dystrophin. And when this protein is absent, muscle cells deteriorate and die, and so boys progressively get weaker. Usually by the age of 8 to 12 years old, they lose the ability to walk. And usually by, you know, anywhere between 16 to 18 to 25 years old, they become completely paralyzed and usually succumb to either pulmonary or cardiac failure in their late teens, early 20s.
So Duchenne, if I understand the literature, is a form of muscular dystrophy?
Yes, there really is no disease called muscular dystrophy.
Oh, really?
Correct. Back before we understood the genetic makeup of these diseases, it was basically based upon the symptoms. And if a disease or a patient exhibited muscle weakness, muscle deterioration, it was called a muscular dystrophy. But once we started through gene mapping, understanding which genes cause these diseases and finding out that there's a whole host of different genes that are mutated and affected, we were able to isolate different symptoms and associate them with a different gene. And they're really completely different diseases. There's Duchenne is different than ALS, which is different than spinal muscle atrophy. But in past, many of these diseases were just clumped together under the term muscular dystrophy.
And it was all called one thing. And now these things are sort of broken out. Are they all diseases that affect muscles then? I mean, does it have to do with the sort of the disintegration of your musculature?
It does. The result can be very similar. The cause can be quite different, though. Some diseases tend to be more neurological in that the neurons that are affecting the muscles can be affected. In the case of Duchenne, it's strictly a muscle protein that is affected, which means there's no stability to the muscle cells. The muscle cells die, and therefore there's a whole cascade of negative events when a muscle cell dies and other cells die around it, and therefore the boys just get weaker and weaker.
Is there this Duchenne is affects boys and only boys?
There are few girls that have this disease. It's very rare. It's an X-linked chromosome disease. And so girls have two X chromosomes. And so we have kind of a redundant system, if you will. Whereas boys, if their X chromosome is mutated, they don't have a backup system.
That's interesting. And how many boys are actually affected by Duchenne?
It's about 1 in 3,500 male births. So in the United States, there's somewhere between 15 to 20,000 boys with Duchenne. Worldwide, somewhere around 250,000.
That seems sort of high to me.
Duchenne is really the largest rare disease, if you like oxymorons. And it does, it's a pretty large rare disease. We are in contact and work with many organizations that treat diseases that are very, very, very small.
Your organization, Cure Duchenne, although you're somewhat local, you live in Newport Beach.
Correct.
But your organization is nationally based.
It is. So we obviously work with families all over the country and really all over the world. We fund science all over the world. We raise money all over the country. So we, you know, with technology these days and science, it really doesn't know any boundaries.
Is there, I'm going to go back to this idea that this is something that primarily affects young boys, little boys, because did you say most boys are diagnosed sometime between the age of 3 and 5?
Correct.
Is there any way to tell before a child is born if they're predisposed or if they have this disease, or is it something that starts after birth?
So this is a genetic defect that the boys have since their inception, really, conception. And there is a simple blood test that usually can tell very early on whether the boy looks like he has Duchenne. It's an elevated CK level. And from there, you go on to do genetic testing. But it's a pretty telltale sign that comes from a simple blood test.
Really? When you say if it looks like a boy has Duchenne, what does that mean?
So Duchenne is actually a very easy disease to do a diagnosis by eyeballing it, basically. Most boys that have Duchenne have very enlarged calf muscles. And if you would look at a little boy with Duchenne getting up off the floor and compare it to a boy, a friend, a sibling that did not have Duchenne, you would see quite a remarkable difference in the way that the boy has to kind of use his arms to walk up his legs in order to get up off the ground.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I find that really interesting. We want to, the goal of Cure Duchenne is very specific and very ambitious. And you're not primarily interested in helping boys manage their condition, is my understanding. Your goal is to end this disease and to find a cure.
That's correct. So unfortunately, we'll never really be able to end Duchenne because about half the time, the disease is as a result of being inherited. It's passed down from mother to son. But in about half the cases, it's a spontaneous mutation. In our case, in our family, there was no family history of this disease. I'd never even heard of the word Duchenne. And it just, it's the largest gene in the body, and there's a lot of room for error. And unfortunately, you know, things go wrong. And so boys are created with this defect in their dystrophin gene.
When you say it's a spontaneous mutation, what does that mean?
It means that just something goes wrong. When the gene is being formed from the time that they're, you know, at conception, really, it's a huge gene, and there's just a lot of room for error throughout our genetic development.
Hmm. Okay. When you, how long have you've been looking for a cure for 10 years since the beginning of the organization?
Correct. So,
And how do you do that?
Every way we can. So our mission is to find a cure for Duchenne. And we when we first got the diagnosis in 2002 that our son had this disease, we did the normal thing that most parents do, and we looked around for an organization to help us. And both my husband and I, you know, have business backgrounds, and the last thing in my mind was that I was going to start a nonprofit organization. I didn't know anything about running a nonprofit. But it became very clear to us that most of the organizations, in fact, all of the organizations that existed out there, either dealt with a large range of muscular dystrophies and provided a large range of services, which is great and fantastic, but they weren't zeroed in on finding a cure.
Because what were the services that they're offering?
Oh, everything from wheelchairs to camps to parent support to, you know, parent self-esteem and early research, too, which is really important.
Right.
But, yeah.
Which I would say those are all useful services, right?
Exactly.
But those are geared towards helping people cope with living with the disease, either yourself or a family member.
Correct.
But no one actually saying, let's end this.
Correct.
Okay. You said earlier that you're not sure that you would ever be able to get rid of Duchenne or wipe that out. Is that true, or is it possible to find a cure for a disease like this?
No, we can find a cure for it. So we can cure the disease.
Oh, you're saying we can't prevent the disease necessarily.
Correct.
Because who knows how that happens?
It's going to happen. Okay. It's just going to happen in nature. but we can find treatments for it, and we can find a cure that we can deliver really, really early, to the point that, you know, if things go the way we believe they will, treatment could be administered upon birth or very, very early, that hopefully the boys could live pretty normal lives.
And is this something, does it have to do with isolating these as different diseases? You were talking about Duchenne and ALS. Is that another form of this type of disease? Is the fact that you've been able to isolate these separately and say they're not the same thing, does that help with trying to find a specific medical intervention?
Oh, absolutely. Completely. It's transformed research, and that they can really zero in on understanding the particular mutation. In the case of Duchenne, we actually understand the disease very well. We can see the gene. We know what's wrong with it. We can see that there's different points on the gene that can be mutated, and we can actually go in and pinpoint certain mutations on this one gene and correct it at that, you know, micro level.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Does stem cell research have anything to do with this?
It does, actually. We're looking into stem cell therapies that could perhaps help with the cardiac issues with Duchenne.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I find that really sad, because when you said that this is a fatal disease.
It is.
And for people who suffer from it, what finally actually takes someone's life is that they're not able to breathe anymore?
So respiratory issues have been a good part of the fatalities. However, with more current ventilation techniques, cardiac is really what's killing the boys.
And is that because, how does that work? I mean, how does this disease lead to cardiac arrest? Is that what it is?
So as muscle cells die, there's inflammation that comes in, which is a natural response in the body. And inflammation will lead to scar tissue and fibrosis of the muscle. Mm. So both in cardiac muscle, smooth muscle, and skeletal muscle, as muscle cells die, they're replaced with fibrosis and scar tissue. And you can imagine if your heart is being transformed from a viable muscle organ into one that's very infiltrated with fat and scar, it just doesn't work.
Right. That's not gonna work in your favor at all. You've been doing this for 11 years now. Do you have hope as to, do you think there'll be a cure in our lifetime?
I believe there will be a cure in our lifetime.
You do?
I do.
You think it's close?
I do, yes.
Okay. Who's doing the best research? Is it done in America or is it done overseas?
Both.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
So we're working on this in America?
Oh, absolutely.
Trying to get this done.
Absolutely.
All right. You have a very personal connection that you've sort of alluded to in our conversation as to why you started this organization and why it's very important to you. And that's because you're the mother of a boy who suffers from Duchenne. I don't want to say suffer. I want to say lives with Duchenne. Can we take a quick music break? And when we get back, I would like to hear from you about what it's like to be part of a family that lives with this disease.
Sure.
All right. You're listening to The Friendship Show on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. We'll be back in just a minute with Deborah Miller of Cure Duchenne.
All right.
Welcome back. You're listening to Friendship Show on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. My name is Mark Miller. I have been talking with Deborah Miller, who is the founder of Cure Duchenne, a nonprofit organization dedicated to finding a cure for the disease Duchenne. Deborah, before the break, we were talking and saying that you have a very personal connection to this work and a passion to find a cure, and that's because you are the mother of a boy who lives with Duchenne. How old is your son today?
Hawken is 17 years old. He'll be 18 and an adult, as he reminds me, next month.
Hawken?
Hawken.
Where does that come from?
We made it up. However, after we made it up, my husband did remind me there was a famous hockey player by the name of Hawken Loop.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Because your husband is a hockey player from back in the Midwest.
Yes, that's
true. We should clear this up quickly since we're getting into personal stuff. Your husband is from Minnesota.
Yes.
I lived in Minnesota for 20-some years, so I certainly understand the importance of hockey to those boys growing up there back in Minnesota. Especially, he's from way up north.
He's from, as he says, the moose get bigger up there.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And he's, we don't want to get too sidetracked on this, but International Falls, which is up in that area, because he's like 90 minutes from Canada.
Yeah, he grew up in a city called Crookston, Minnesota.
Yeah, probably the coldest place in America would be
yes.
my guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's
he tried to get me to move back there.
Did he really?
I won.
Are you kidding me? Like that was up for discussion. Not happening. At what age was your son Hawken diagnosed with Duchenne?
Hawken was almost 6 years old. In fact, it was November of 2002. He should have been diagnosed years before. When he was three, we sensed something was wrong. And we spent a lot of time at the pediatrician's office trying to get to the bottom of it. And we were basically told that, you know, he was a big kid. He's going to grow into it. And we were treated a little bit like hysterical parents.
Oh, really? But when you say he was a big kid and was going to grow into it, like what were you seeing in your son and saying, this doesn't seem right to me?
When he was 4 years old on a soccer team, he wasn't running around or keeping up, and no concerns because at that point the kids were chasing the butterflies and not really paying attention. But we did notice that the following year when he was five, and the kids really started getting competitive and they wanted to win. And he would start running and he'd just stop and start crying.
Oh.
Yeah, it was heartbreaking.
Was it because it hurt?
He just couldn't. I mean, he just ran out of steam.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What is that like for a parent? So eventually you got to the bottom of that. And when a doctor finally sat you down and said, these are the issues that your son is facing, what I can't imagine what that moment is like for a parent.
It was, it's hard to put into words. It was the most terrifying thing that you can imagine. I had premonitions. We knew something was going on. And the longer we were delving into this, the more it was becoming apparent that there was something serious. And, you know, for 5 years, you have this perfectly beautiful little blonde hair, blue eyed kid that is just, you know, your heart and soul, and that you would die for. And then you find out that he's not going to be walking for very long and you're going to lose him. You know, as most parents are sending their kids off to college, you know, basically, we felt we were going to be burying our son at that point.
So certainly your life changes forever when you get that information.
Completely.
What was the first thing you did?
Pray.
Did you?
Seriously.
And then what do you go through as a family to say, okay, I mean, this is it. This is, you know, our lives are changed, and then what do you do? I mean, how do you set out to take the best care you can of your child at that point?
So in hindsight, I can see the stages now, and it's basically the stages of losing someone, all the grieving stages. And in essence, we did lose the boy that we thought we had. We lost, you know, the playing ball with his dad conversation. We lost, you know, the playing, being on the hockey team conversation. We lost the girlfriends, the, you know, being a grandparent. I mean, we lost all that. And at the same time, I would go into my closet and cry and pray and come out and have to put a smile on, because he was the same little boy that day that he was the day before we found the diagnosis. So it was really hard. You go through stages of denial, anger, depression, and you know, we were frustrated that if this is the most common rare disease or the most common muscle disease, why haven't we ever even heard the word Duchenne? And that was one of the reasons we started the foundation, that, again, we come from sales and marketing backgrounds, and not that we want to, you know, make a market out of this disease, but we know enough about branding that it's going to be hard to cure a disease if nobody knows what it is.
Can I ask you, what is Hawkins' relationship to the disease?
So we were very careful not to involve him in any of this conversation early on. In fact, if anything, we were probably a little paranoid and keeping information from him. We wanted him to have the most normal childhood that he could. And we were criticized, and a lot of parents took a different route and just, you know, basically were very honest and upfront and spilled it out in the beginning that, you know, you're going to be in a wheelchair, but the wheelchairs are really cool and they're motorized, and kind of preparing the kids all along. And we went a different route and just tried to be ahead of him in terms of the progression of the disease. So give him a scooter before he really needed it, so he was never going to have to be in a position to be falling down and experience that before we got him on an electric scooter. So we've just tried to be kind of ahead of the game all along. And it's really interesting. Recently, he's really developed a love for journalism and writing. He's a great writer. And we asked him, I think, 4 years ago for the first time, 3 or 4 years ago, to speak at one of our gala events. And he'd never done that before. And he was a terribly shy child growing up. But he did. And on his own now, he's taken it on and gotten more involved. But he's doing it from more of an adult perspective. And I'm so proud of him, because he's doing a lot better than most boys with Duchenne. Mm-hmm. And he knows that. And I think he feels a responsibility to try and help other boys, to help them understand, to figure out what they can do instead of what they can't do.
Well, that's really powerful. And it must make you very proud to see
him. I'm very proud of him.
Trying to actually make a difference for other people. Your son does not walk today. He rides a scooter.
So he can still walk, but, you know, so he walks around the house and he can walk a very short distance. We encourage him to use the scooter as much as possible so as not to wear and tear his muscle cells.
Right. Does he get a little defiant on that sometimes?
You know, it's bittersweet.
Mom, I can walk.
Yeah, so it's bittersweet because he used to resist it a lot, and it was a kind of a battle. And unfortunately, now he doesn't resist it.
Right. Well, it may have as much to do with his comfort level with who he is and where he's at as anything else. And he goes to high school.
He does. He goes to Sage Hill High School.
He's a senior in high school.
Senior.
And I guess this may be important to point out is that this is a disease that affects his muscles. He's bright and intelligent and a quick thinker and all of those things. It has nothing to do with his ability to function intellectually.
Now, Hawkins is quite bright. He's doing very well in school. There can be some cognitive issues with some of the boys, and some of them are, you know, have almost autistic-like learning disabilities. And because there is dystrophin in the brain also,
I never considered that.
Yeah.
Okay. Does it affect boys' ability to communicate at all? Do they lose the ability to talk or
eventually? Yes.
Do those sorts of things? That is something that will happen.
Yes.
All right. Can I tell you a quick personal story?
Sure.
You said your son, he's a senior at Sage Hill High School. I was doing a service day at Sage Hill High School where I was going on behalf of a friendship shelter where I sort of moonlight during the week. And talking with the 11th graders about what they want to do for their volunteer service, because it's a very interesting and important part of education at Sage Hill. And so as all of these kids were coming in and meeting me and talking with them, I said, so what organizations have you guys met and what have you learned? And they said, there's this really cool organization here called Cure Duchenne, and we think that we're going to volunteer there. We'd like to find some way to help that organization. And I said, oh, really? Why is that so important to you? And they said, well, because we have a classmate of ours who has Duchenne, and we want to do everything we can to try and help him while he's in school with us. So I'm assuming that was your son.
That was Hawken, yes.
And it was like probably 60% of the kids that I talked with. It's like, well, why am I even here? Who are these cute Duchenne people? Let's get on this. Let's get this done for them, guys.
Yeah, so Sage Hill has been wonderful to Hawken. As a freshman, he's always had a love for football. And he, of course, would have loved to played football, but Sage Hill put him on the football team as their statistician. So he's been part of the team, going on the team buses ever since he was a freshman, doing the stats, writing up whatever they write up, and yeah.
Really? That's where his journalism skills come in, right?
Exactly.
Doing all those sorts of things. Okay. You guys are serious at Cure Duchenne. I mean, you are doing research all over the world. And influencing the course of the progression of how this disease is dealt with. Okay? Can we take a short break here? And I think when we get back, one of your researchers is going to be here, and we can talk more about what is the science behind this and what direction is it going.
Great.
All right. You're listening to Friendship Show on KX93.5. My name is Mark Miller. We've been talking with Deborah Miller from Cure Duchenne. When we get back, Mike Kelly, scientist and researcher for Cure Duchenne, will be with us. Welcome back. This is Friendship Show here on KX93.5. Laguna's only FM. We've been talking with Deborah Miller, the founder of Cure Duchenne, an organization dedicated to finding a cure for this fatal disease that affects, did you say one in every 3,500 boys?
Correct.
In America or in the world?
Worldwide.
In the world, worldwide. How many boys in America?
Somewhere between 15 to 20,000.
Okay. I think, Deborah, on the phone, we were talking before the break that you are serious about this research, and you have actually gotten many clinical studies done, and your goal is to get a cure on the market, to bring things through the system and to say, this cure is available now in America for these boys.
Correct.
All right. Mike Kelly, are you on the phone?
I am, Mark.
Ah, there you are. Mike, welcome to Friendship Show. Thank you for calling in.
You're most welcome. Nice to be here.
Deborah, can you help us? What role does Mike play in Cure Duchenne?
Mike is our chief scientific officer. He comes out of pharmaceutical companies and biotech companies. And instead of hiring an academic scientist, we felt it was really mandatory that we find somebody to guide our organization in how we're going to get these drugs out of the labs and into human beings and into prescribed drugs.
Okay. So when you talk about a cure for this disease, and Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, you're talking about a pharmaceutical intervention. This is about approving drugs that cure the disease, yes?
That's effectively the long-term goal, Mark. We have been funding research and development at a number of pharmaceutical companies aimed at that sole purpose, approved pharmaceutical drugs that can treat and effectively reverse the course of this disease.
What is that process like? That must take a long time, is my guess.
It's long, it's arduous, it's incredibly risky, and it's incredibly expensive. And I think the history of drug discovery and development is one that's been faced with many potholes. I think Duchenne is at a time whenever we can afford right now to be optimistic for the first time. I think that we've seen drug development programs that we've sponsored advance through to the later stages, in fact, the latest stages of the drug development process. And we've got high expectations for the first drugs to be approved within the next year or more.
Oh, you do? In the next year, you think there'll be a drug on the market?
We do. Actually, our expectations are much higher than that. We truly believe that within the next 18 months, we have at least two shots on goal, and we expect possibly two, for the first time, two drugs to be approved solely for the treatment of this disease.
And do you have, Mike, in this process, it's my understanding that you have done the research on at least seven sort of big projects that have taken research off of the page, right? So someone does all the research and they give you a memo or a book or something and you read that. But you've taken seven of those and actually gotten them into clinical studies.
Well, the only way to make that happen is to be involved and engaged early. But to increase chances of success, you really want to make sure that you partner with companies whose sole mission and focus is to drive drugs through the development process into approval. And one of the key properties that Cure Duchenne has, and Deborah and Paul both had a vision of this very early on, was that we need to work more and more with drug development companies rather than research organizations. It's development that really is the key in here. We want to affect this generation of boys. So specifically to your question, Mark, we have invested and worked with drug development organizations, allowed them to do the heavy lifting of running a clinical trial and using their technique and their experience, their knowledge and know-how in order to drive this through the process.
And when you say clinical studies, Mike, does that mean that the drugs that you believe are going to be approved in the next year to year and a half, that those drugs have already been tested on humans?
That's exactly right. There's multiple clinical studies that are going on in the United States and all the way around the world right now. In fact, the most advanced that has completed its phase 3 trial was in more than 20 countries worldwide. More than 300 Duchenne boys participated in that key pivotal study. And that's true of a number of different modalities that Cure Duchenne has been involved with, helped sponsor, and helped fund.
Okay, now go back and tell me this number one more time. How many boys with Duchenne participated in this worldwide international study?
So you have to understand that Duchenne is a highly fragmented disease because of its genetic origin. So we're taking boys with very specific types of mutations into trials that have drugs that are targeted towards their unique specific set of mutations.
Okay.
So the most advanced drugs are targeting one of the exons on the dystrophin gene, exon 51, for example. And that there represents probably about 14% of all the Duchenne boys. So the clinical trials have focused solely on those boys as participating in those trials.
Okay. So this study is focusing on a specific, Deborah used the word mutation. Is that correct? This is a specific mutation that happens.
Yes, it's a specific set of mutations within one part of the gene.
Okay.
And as we look at other boys who have got mutations in different parts of the gene, modifications on that their drug are needed in order to target those types of boys. And that's part of the pipeline of opportunities that we're building. One of the things Cure Duchenne is being unique about is deciding really how a clinical strategy would work for this disease. We laid down a roadmap, a therapeutic roadmap, of how to target the disease from multiple ways. And the way that we look for partnerships, the way we look to fund, the way that we look to invest, is guided in many ways by that roadmap to a cure that Cure Duchenne organization has put together over the last few years.
So when you do this clinical study, Mike, what's the end result? Why is it so encouraging? So I understand that you were focusing on a specific strain. I'm going to use lay terms here. A specific strain of Duchenne with a specific set of mutations. You put these boys into a clinical trial. I'm assuming that they took the medication that you have developed. And what was the result of that? Why is it promising?
Oh, incredibly promising. But let me just make sure that we fully understand and the audience fully understands. Cure Duchenne does not run clinical trials. We provide the funds and the money for pharmaceutical companies to actually run and engage those clinical trials. What we're doing, Mark, is tapping into their knowledge and know-how. They're the organizations that are doing the heavy lifting. We partner with them. We bring insight. We bring our scientific advisory board. We bring a lot of deep knowledge about the disease and money. And all of that there helps facilitate the process.
Well, but let me ask you this then, Mike. But these companies wouldn't necessarily be doing this if you weren't bringing money to them, right?
Yes, I think the early stages of investment are critical. There is this valley of death. It's a very early process in the drug development process where the risk typically is too high for typical investors or pharmaceutical companies to get engaged. And it's organizations like Cure Duchenne that come in and recognize the potential of that research, invest in it, and literally remove the risk out of that there that allows companies now to see the opportunity in a much clearer way. And we'll continue to invest and push that and accelerate the development process.
Okay. And this is really, Deborah, isn't it? This is the partnership between public and private financing that gets things done, right?
Correct. And we really established early on venture philanthropy, where we would actually partner with businesses, our pharmaceutical companies, to develop these drugs and partner financially with them also. Because if there's a return that comes back to Cure Duchenne from that, then we just plow it right back into more research.
So let's talk about this a little bit. I'm going to get back to Mike. Will you stick around? Because I want to get back to you in a second. But this is kind of this model that you describe as venture philanthropy. It's kind of something that you've developed, isn't it?
I wouldn't say that we developed it. So when we first invested in a company, a little tiny biotech company in the Netherlands called Prosenza, and I just didn't know enough to know that I wasn't supposed to ask for equity when we're putting, you know, $1.3 million in. It came natural to me coming from business, and they said yes, and so we went on from there, not thinking too much of it.
You say, if I invest $1 million, I want something back.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we raise money from donors, and to me, it's logical that if a nonprofit is going to raise money from, you know, especially families are doing bake sales and marathon runs and things like that, and we're going to hand that money over to a for-profit entity, you know, I think some of that should come back to the nonprofit to further take care of more research versus all the profit going to the shareholders of the company.
So let me see if I understand this model then. So you're a nonprofit and you raise money the way that nonprofits do. And like you said, that's going to individuals and saying, would you please give me some of your money because I would like to cure this disease. And then you took that money and invested in a research company?
A biotech company.
a biotech company. I have no idea what that is. Uh-huh. Something important and scientific, I imagine.
Yeah, it's like a small pharmaceutical company that would focus on earlier stage research.
Okay, so you take that money and you say, hey, I've done a lot of reading about your biotech company, and you seem to be really good. You seem to be really sharp and smart. You seem to be a little bit underfunded. And I'm wondering if you would like $1 million from me. And what I would like is for you to focus your research on developing a drug for this disease. Mm-hmm. And by the way, if you make money off of this, I want you to give some of that back to me.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. Can I ask, how much did you get back on that first one?
Well, that was in 2004, and they had an IPO in 2013.
What's an IPO?
Initial public offering. So they went public.
Oh.
On NASDAQ. And they raised $70 million.
Oh, come on.
And and just interesting enough, 2 weeks ago, a larger biotech company in the San Francisco Bay Area announced that they were buying Prosensa for about $800 million.
Oh, my goodness.
And so we were able to cash out the stock that we earned there. And we are now in the process of vetting new research projects that we can fund.
Okay. I have to say, as someone who works for a nonprofit and, like, you know, struggles every day to try and raise money, I'd like to talk to you more about this $800 million thing that you've got going.
I would like to say that we got the $800 million. We got a very, 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 very small portion.
Right, I understand.
Very
that,
small.
That gets divvied up. I get it. What happens? First of all, I'm assuming that as a nonprofit and as a development officer of that organization, you've figured out that you can do this as a nonprofit. This is all allowed and just a really smart way to go about running the business?
Absolutely. Now, you have to be careful. And we did vet this very carefully before we invested in the company. And the simplified rule is that if this is an investment that you would do whether or not you're getting a return. In other words, if it addresses your core mission of your organization, then it's perfectly acceptable. And this was like the best research project, all of our scientific advisory board. It was very well vetted. Whether we got a return or not, this was going to be where we put our money.
Wow. And so that's just it. So I'm assuming that seems to have turned out pretty well for you.
Yes.
Because they did very well. But you could put money in and they could come back in 2 years and say, we have to close up shop. There's just not enough to keep us going here.
Absolutely.
And then you just say, well, we tried and mm-hmm. not everything is going to be the way that we want it to be.
But that's where your due diligence comes in. And that's where having somebody like Mike, who comes from the pharmaceutical business, can help us understand the risks. And obviously, it's not a for sure thing. But, you know, we feel pretty good about the investment we made.
Okay, Mike, I want to get back to this question because I told Deborah this was going to happen when she first came in this morning. We're going to run out of time long before we run out of things to talk about. I want to go back to this clinical research that Cure Duchenne was involved in, not running, but invested in the process and getting it done. What were the results from that clinical research that were so promising that Cure Duchenne believes that the drugs from that study will be approved?
So that's actually a great question. To go back to the beginning, Mark, one understands that the disease is caused by the loss of a particular protein called dystrophin. It's that makes the muscles vulnerable and why cells die. And so an early part of our strategy was really to define scientific strategies that could be used in order to restore that dystrophin protein in the boys that didn't have it. And that's exactly what the clinical trials are aiming to do. And what we've been able to understand through muscle biopsy is as the drugs are given, the dystrophin that's missing is being put back into the muscle cells. And
oh,
that's
wow.
the first thing. So if you know that the loss of the protein is the cause of the factor for the disease, then putting it back in seems like a very simple and right thing to do. But on a clinical level, what we're also seeing is that dystrophin that has been put back into the boys that lack it, the disease is stabilizing in them. They have the ability to continue to walk longer, and we're looking at other clinical benefits of it, in addition to being able to breathe better and things like that. So we are seeing the primary cause, which is the loss of dystrophin, being reversed, and we're seeing clinical benefits come from that. So collectively, the both of them together tell us that we're very hopeful, and we believe that the FDA is going to look at it in the same sort of way, that these drugs have a meaningful clinical benefit. They're reversing the course of the disease. They're changing the natural history that we typically would have seen without a drug intervention. And that gives us the optimism that the next couple of years, we will see a drug or two that will be approved and targeted towards putting that protein back in again.
Well, that's very encouraging. And I would just say you're absolutely right. It seems very simple, doesn't it? You lack a protein, so we need to create a protein. Very simple, and yet, like you said, very, very complicated and difficult to do.
And I might also add that we funded not just Prosensa, but we funded another company in Boston called Sarepta Therapeutics, another company in New Jersey called PTC Therapeutics. And both of those companies also have extremely promising drugs that are hopefully going to be approved next year.
Can you reverse the disease?
No. Once you actually lose muscle, it's one of the reasons why we want to make sure that as these clinical trials advance and as the drugs actually get approved, children that are very much younger, before the disease actually progresses to a point, they will be on therapy. And that we envisage a scenario where children as young as 3, 4, 5 will be treated with these drugs before the disease actually ravages muscle.
Okay. So once you have the cure, once you have the medication, early detection diagnosis is going to be important so that so boys can get this treatment before there's too much damage done to their bodies.
That's exactly right. And what we're seeing in clinical trials, Mark, to that point, is that older boys on these therapies are being stabilized. And that gives us real confidence that younger boys will see significantly more benefit. And that is what we're seeing out of the late-stage clinical results.
All right. Mike, thank you so much for joining us this morning. It's been incredibly educational. And thank you so much for the work that you do at Cure Duchenne. And best of luck to you in the future.
Mark, it's a pleasure. And thanks so much.
All right. Deborah, before we go, what can people do? How can they help with the work that you're doing at Cure Duchenne?
So basically, as Mike said, research is expensive. We do need to raise money so we can continue funding therapies for all these other boys that aren't in clinical trials right now. And you can go to www.cureduchenne, that's cureduchenne.org, and you can donate. On February 28th, we're having a wine gala here at the Balboa Bay Club, where we're having about 20 Napa wineries come down and pour wine for our audience. And if you'd like information on that, you can go to our website also.
Give us that address one more time, that website
it's,
address.
www.cureduchenne. That's C-U-R-E-D, as in David, U-C-H-E-N-N-E. org.
All right. Deborah, thank you so much for coming in this morning and talking with us about your organization. It's tremendous work that you're doing. You're changing the course of the world for children who aren't even here yet. And that's pretty fantastic.
Well, thank you for the work you're doing and the opportunity.
All right. You've been listening to Friendship Show on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. My name is Mark Miller. Ida May has invaded the booth and she'd like a word.
I want to talk to Common a minute, please.
We can't do that now.
Why?
We can do that. We'll do that in your show.
Oh, okay.
Don't worry. I'm not going anywhere.
Oh, good. All right.
All right. Okay. Well, there she is. Ida May is up next with some radio neighboring. And we'll be back next week, Saturday, 9 o'clock. The Friendship Show on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM.